And I was sitting in grad school one afternoon and just like bored out of my mind, thinking, if you could be doing anything right now, what would you like to be doing? That thought came to me, and I thought, I'd like to be building speakers.
Welcome to the Building Excellence Podcast. I'm your host, Bailey Miles. The Building Excellence Podcast is all about sharing inspiring stories from some of the most successful athletes, coaches, business minds, and thought leaders to help you build excellence in your life, leadership, and legacy. To learn more, visit baileymiles.com and be sure to rate, review, and follow us on all social media platforms. Now let's get to the show and start building excellence in your life, leadership, and legacy. Steve Irby is the founder and CEO of Kicker and Stillwater Designs. In 1973, Kicker's Live and Loud legacy began as a two-man operation, hand-building professional speaker systems in a narrow one-car garage. With very few resources and intense love for music, Steve invented the mobile stereo enclosure market from his Stillwater, Oklahoma community, where he developed the original Kicker. It was the first full-frequency range speaker box designed specifically for cars and trucks. From that historic moment, delivering concert-like audio quality across a wide volume range with renowned bass and accurate sound has always been the Kicker way. The original Kicker was made for use behind the seat in pickup trucks, and at the time, thousands of vehicles rolled along Oklahoma roads due to a recent oil boom. Because Steve had already been making a living designing and building the larger PA speakers, he literally over-designed the much smaller original Kicker. It produced a ton of bass, and when customers had it installed, heard it, and felt the enormous rumble through their truck seat, they said it really kicked. Today, Kicker products are currently sold by approximately 1,200 authorized dealers in the United States, and export sales are managed through a network of distributors serving over 2,000 dealers in approximately 50 countries. On the show, Steve shares the inside story of just how Kicker came to be, lessons from growing up, never quitting, the power of the three P's, passion, perseverance, and prayer, faith, family, and much more. To find out more about Steve and Kicker, be sure to check out their website at kicker.com. Enjoy the show. Hey everyone, welcome to the Building Excellence Podcast. Today I have a special guest, Steve Irby, with me. Steve, thank you so much for being on the show.
Happy to be here, Bailey. Yeah.
Yeah, well.
Pleasure.
Yeah, if you wouldn't mind, maybe give our listeners some context to maybe your background and what life was like growing up for you.
Okay, I'm in Stillwater. I'm Stillwater right now. I'm Stillwater, Oklahoma, born and raised here. And I grew up in the 50s. I was born in 48. So, I was kind of definitely a baby boomer and grew up with all those guys and gals. And it was really a pretty, looking back, a pretty idealistic life, I guess you would say. All the GIs were back and they had the GI Bill and were going to college and kind of rebuilding their futures, And so there was a lot of optimism, not in every aspect, but there's a lot of optimism generally in the world and of course in Stillwater. And it was kind of interesting, I guess, in this town. This has never been a big industrial town, more educational town with Oklahoma State, but there was not a really a fluent side and then maybe a middle class. It was almost like everybody was kind of middle class. We all kind of grew up in about the same size homes. Everything was, pretty similar like that. And I had I really had a good childhood, had good parents. I had a sister that was a year and a half older and attended public schools, which was right across the street from me. And it was a brand new school. And so, I think I grew up in a with an air of optimism, about life and you can be, my parents always said, you can be whatever you want to be. They always told me that. And, I guess the American dream, I bought into it. Yeah.
Awesome. Well, talking about optimism, I think that's a unique perspective. Do you feel like your parents obviously had a profound impact upon you? I've heard you tell a little bit about kind of the impact of your parents, but was your dad, was he a professor at the time at Oklahoma State? Is that correct?
He was an associate professor in architecture. And He actually taught construction technology. That was kind of his thing. He was an architect. We had a private practice at home. When he built our house, he built his office on part of the house and then the house. So he did that more in the summers because he didn't teach in the summers. He had summers off and was always in the office working. And but yeah, so that was he was there at Oklahoma State for 30 years. So I grew up around campus, around that sort of thing, and went to school with a lot of kids that were kids of people that worked at the university or that taught at the university. And yeah, so that was my mom was a Girl Scout leader, was heavily involved in volunteer activities. And in those days, I mean, I remember we had one car, so that was pretty common. In fact, when my dad built our house, we moved in 52. He built it with a carport for one car. And it wasn't too long after that he had to build a pad up to the side, because we needed a second car. So that was kind of the world. And so he was teaching, and then we had the summers off, and he had the summers off, and we did too. And so did quite a bit of traveling, vacationing, and things like that.
Yeah, so with your dad being involved in architecture and construction, did that bring about some type of curiosity to working with your hands and maybe an engineering perspective and creating things? Because I know that's been a big aspect and component of your life as well with the inception of Stillwater Designs and Kicker.
Right. Yeah, I grew up with that, and we pretty much built everything. That was kind of my dad's deal, and obviously I picked up on it. But the house that we moved into in 52 when I was 4 years old, he designed that and was basically the general contractor. He worked on it, and he had some of his students worked on it, and it was we built that, and we built a couple of go-karts together. Mostly he did the work, but I was interested in the finished product. And yeah, so that was our environment, and probably not really. I mean, we definitely weren't poor, but we didn't have enough money to just go out and buy anything we wanted. So we almost always made it, from go-karts to motorbikes, put an engine on a motorbike, and he built a camping trailer that we used. And he was into woodworking, made furniture. Most of the furniture in our house he built, and that's how I got started in woodworking. And actually building my first speaker was in the wood shop up at the university that was part of his department, and we built stuff up there. And so yeah, that was I definitely grew up building things and thinking of things as how to build it rather than how to buy it, although I certainly did like to buy things too.
As we all do. But I think that's a
Yeah.
unique perspective, is being able to work with your hands, create something, have a vision
Right.
for something, and then go out and actually execute it. As you look
Right.
back, what are the benefits to doing those things with your dad, and then just to being creative? Do you feel like, what are the benefits to that?
Well, for one thing, it gives you confidence that you can do things. And even if you're really not that great at it, or working with your dad or someone else, I mean, they're doing most of the work. Like I'm holding the board on the other end as he pushes it through the table saw, this sort of thing. You get the idea that this is not that hard. I mean, I see how this works, and so I wasn't a stranger, to those things. And I think that's important. For kids to have those experiences, whether they're good at it or not, they've experienced it. And then later in life, maybe when they're ready to try something, it's not so foreign and strange that they might try that, because they've had some experience with it. And I think that was one of the reasons that I got into business, is that my dad had also encouraged me to buy my own go-kart parts, from older men, where I wanted things, I wanted him to call him up and try to make a deal, and he said, no, you need to give him a call and do this. And but he would coach me, on what to say, and how to bargain. And I remember I called this one guy. It's kind of a crusty old mechanic, but he had a couple of go-kart engines I really wanted, and offered him a deal. And he said, "No, son, I couldn't do that, son." And that was about it, so I hung up. And my dad said, "Well, why don't you offer him this socket set?" It was a really nice socket set that my granddad had given to us. We weren't using it. Said, "Why don't you offer this?" And so I was like, "Eh." Anyway, I did, and he took it and made the deal. And so I think just those experiences helping me set up to I rented at least a horse pasture and then rented it out to some people that had horses. And so I made the difference between their rent and what I paid for lease. And he helped me do that. And I really wasn't even into horses, but I learned how to make a profit. You lease it for one price and your total rent for the other horses, which were people he knew, came out to more than the lease money. And so I made that profit. And then I had to pay the lady that owned it. And just some things like that. And growing up to where you think, if you think about starting a business, you go, "Well, yeah, I can do this. I've done it before," even if it was on a small scale. Of course, you have no idea what you're getting into.
That's true. That's true. Yeah, but I love that story, and I love hearing about kind of the intentionality of your dad when you were young to be able to maybe sometimes by necessity, but going out and doing things on your own, but he guided you throughout that process. And so also you talked about having confidence of doing something on your own and being able to know, hey, I can do this. That is so critical because once you understand that I'm going to try new things. I'm going to push the limit a little bit. If I fail, I fail. But if I don't, what else happens? And then I just move on to the next thing. And I think that's a great, great perspective, especially as you're in different ventures like you talked about, making deals happen. That's if you've never made a deal happen, that's probably pretty nerve-wracking. But once you do it over and over again, it gets a lot easier.
You do it once and then you go, "Well, this is not as weird and strange as I imagined it to be." The first call was a little bit, but
Sure.
then with that guy, but then he agreed, and so yeah, it's just you learn from that. And if I had never done that, well, I don't know. I mean, I think that those things made a difference.
Absolutely.
Whether you said, I didn't consciously realize that.
Well, what do you think going back at also when you were growing up, were you playing any sports or were you involved in music or different extracurricular activities and maybe some of the things that have a profound impact on you that you haven't already told about?
Well, I did a little bit of sports. Our family was not sports oriented. They were activity oriented, but not necessarily organized sports oriented. And so I grew up doing a lot of things, but I think really, I was on a swimming team in junior high. That was very rigorous. And yeah, and I kind of enjoyed that, but I quit because it was too hard after a couple of years, and always regretted quitting. I didn't like that feeling, and so I think that stuck with me as far as my kind of perseverance in the things I do now is that I really, really disdained that feeling, of quitting, because I wanted to kind of be a winner, not a loser and a quitter. And so I think experiencing that quitting made me have more resolution to not quit again, not quit again. And I took piano lessons from second grade through, gosh, I guess 11th grade, 10th or 11th grade. And my mom made me do it. And then she said at seventh grade, and seventh grade said, "Okay, when you get to the seventh grade, if you want to quit, you can." And so I think the point was is that by that time I had tap musical talent. I realized it and I enjoyed playing. And I think that was pretty smart on her part that, but I had to come to the realization that I liked to do it to continue. And so at that point, I decided to continue that. And that was I think that was influential, in my life to make a decision to continue something, and when I had also that I'd also made decisions to quit things, especially the swimming team, which was a big deal to me. And so I think I learned a couple of things there about continuing and about quitting. And I think that was important. But yeah, that was anyway, I went on to start playing in a rock and roll band when I was a sophomore in high school. But the fact that I knew how to play keyboards and I'd had a musical education, really. I mean, I understood music, and that was influential in that area.
I think that's an important component that I know we'll dive into a little bit into your story about continuing and quitting. I think that's a really interesting dynamic to go back and forth on because how do you know when it's time to push forward and continue to keep going as opposed to, okay, maybe it's time to pivot and step away from this? I think that's a really challenging thing. And maybe we'll just dive into it right now. What, in your opinion, how do you go about analyzing a situation like that? Because you often see little, stories of people who just continue to push and push and push, and then all of a sudden there's a breakthrough. And then there's also stories that we don't hear about as much where they push and push and push and push, and it still just doesn't quite work
Doesn't
until you pivot.
happen. Well, there's no, I don't think there's a real pat answer on that. I've been involved in things, and I'm thinking, business wise, that seemed like a good idea, but after a point in time, one easy way to know when to quit is when you're losing money and you can't afford to lose any more money.
Okay.
That sort of solves it for you.
That's a good point.
So, and I had that happen on more than one project. I mean, not specifically the whole company losing money, but that area just not making it. And at some point in time, you just have to say, you know what? Let's just not do this anymore. And but I don't have any great insight onto that other than you just live it and then make your decisions as you go, and I think, but the persevering thing is maybe it's a more generalized approach rather than specific on one particular thing. You may stop offering one product or one area of service or something like that, but you don't quit. You find something else and you keep going. You don't just throw in the towel and say, well, that's it. So there, and there's also seasons, that change of things that are you do for a season, and then if it's a product, it falls out of popularity, or just things change, personnel change, and a lot of things change. So you have to be willing to kind of change with it. But I think one thing that I have and that I grew up with that maybe a lot of people don't have now is that I felt that I had a purpose in life, and really I'm thinking frankly it was not so much not really spiritual, it was professional. I have a professional area that I need to find, and I'm going to go for it. I'm going to find that, and I'm going to go for it. And I did not have that in college, which is why I dropped out. And and I think that's kind of based on 50s, 60s, kind of the American dream. You can make it, And so I was like all into that, not like changing careers or anything like that, just finding it and then going for it. And when I dropped out of school, I know I was grad school, I was so set on that that I needed to find where I fit in, and I was so ready to just go for it. I mean, I was just like chomping at the bit because maybe it's a reactionary response to being so unhappy in school and not having any idea of where I was going to wanting to just sink my teeth into something. So I think that was turned out to be kind of my spiritual turnaround too, is that, I felt like I came to the point that I felt like that the answers I was looking for in school in sociology, which was I was in solving the world's problems, because it was the Vietnam War. And we were kind of hippie types and, you know, idealistic. And so that was trying to find those answers there, that I became disappointed in theories. And I thought, I just want to get to the bottom line truth, you know. And also, I need to know what the heck I'm going to do with my life, you know. Yeah. I mean, it was a combo of everything, you know, that came together. And I, when I dropped out, and so that was the one reason that to say why I persevered with it is because I felt like I found that my and you might say my vocation. I know that's not everything, but that was something that was really important to me. And I found it, and I found something, I realized something I really love to do. And I just decided I'm going for this. You know, I was so happy, you know, to find that and to just, rather than just flailing around in life and not really having a purpose, it was just, it was just super motivating for me, you know, to do that. And once I realized that I had been doing that actually all along, building things, and then built my first speaker in high school. My dad helped me do that, and got involved in building speakers as a hobby. And so that was, it all kind of came together that this is kind of my deal. This is right for me. And so I guess the frustration helped push me on, that now that I found it and I'm not doing this thing that I'm kind of doing because everyone expects that of me, that I was like, yes, I mean, this is great.
Yeah.
It's exciting, you know?
Yeah, no question. I think you bring up a really good point that it's just finding those things. And I also want to note that you talked about you were building speakers at a young age and you were doing these things throughout college, I would assume.
Yeah.
And so it wasn't like you just picked it up automatically. You were doing these things because you naturally had a desire and a gifting towards that. And you talked about music and piano. And so sometimes it is maybe a tipping point of frustration. Maybe it's a change in career paths for some people. Everyone's different. But I think you talked about just having a deep understanding of a purpose and then just going for it and doing it. And just seeing what
going
happens.
Going from no purpose to purpose is like night and day. I mean, it was for me. Because frankly, I was like super depressed, you know, when I dropped out of school. And, you know, I was taking like amphetamines to study because I couldn't motivate myself. And that was kind of making me crazy too. But I felt like I needed motivation. I needed something to get me going, like, you know, something more than coffee, you know, or something to make me study. And, you know, because I just didn't seem to have it in me to do this thing. And, it finally dawned on me, this is not me, you know, this is not me, and it's my life, and I better figure out my life, you know, rather than trying to do something that fit a square peg in a round hole, you know.
Yeah. Well, was there a lot of pressure? Maybe, I don't know, I'm not sure, but was there a lot of pressure from your family to go to college, get a degree, to get a graduate degree, because your dad was a professor, associate professor, so I would assume there might be a little bit of internal pressure, maybe not.
I think it was recommendations. I didn't feel pressure from them. I maybe felt pressure from just society and from myself, is that I thought this is how you do it, and I'm not doing it very well. I didn't have anybody like berating me, you know, or anything like that. I think it was pretty self-inflicted, you know, that this is how you do things, and I'm just not doing it very well. And it kind of dawned on me that maybe this is not for me at that point in time. So, but yeah, I mean, there was obviously a lot of factors. Of course, another one was you stayed out of Vietnam if you stayed in school. You know, so a lot of us stayed in school for that reason. And fortunately, I had gotten a 4F deferment. So that really wasn't the thing. But I just always thought, yeah, I need to do this. I need to finish this. You know, this is part of, it's like, I wouldn't want to drop out of high school, you know. And I mean, all my friends are still going. You know, that would be too weird. And you know, now I'm in college, and it's kind of the same thing, more of it, and you just keep going. And then I guess part of it's growing up, you know, and starting to realize you better make some decisions yourself and not just follow the flow, you know.
And
And
that's a tough thing to do sometimes when they're your friends or family, or just the nature of the environment that you're in is finish college, get a degree, go to grad school, get a job that looks good rather than maybe as opposed to what you feel like you're inclined to do. And I think you obviously had the courage to step out, or the frustration, courage, whatever you want to call it, to step out and go after what you felt like your natural makeup was. What did that look like when you did decide to step into that profession and having a purpose? And what did it look like that first initial step of starting your company and kind of going from there?
Well, it felt great. Mean, I was like super excited, you know. It's like a new adventure, you know, and it was something that an adventure that I wanted to be on. And so I think that was in a spiritual sense, I think that was my calling in a vocational way. I mean, I don't think that's what my whole life is about. I've realized that over the years, but at that point in time, I mean, I had this dream that I would find something that I really like to do, you know, and I found it. And I had about $12,000 that I'd inherited from my grandparents and been sitting there for a long time. And so I had the money to buy some equipment and start building speaker enclosures. And so and I had the means, and I had the desire, and yeah, it was like super exciting, and I was happy to not have homework because
Me too.
I was happy to go back to work after dinner if I needed to, but I was happy to do that. But it was not like I had something hanging over my head. It was like no, I, you know, so that's why I feel like you know that. That God gave me that because I was self-motivated. In other words, it was something that I wanted to do, not something that was externally imposed on me to do. And which I think is really what Christianity is all about, is I found out that being, you know, motivated to do the right thing, then trying to follow the rules and do it in your own strength. And so I think I was you might say I was empowered. I really felt that, you know. And I was just wanted to research everything. I read every book on speakers that was in the OSU library. I copied all the magazine articles. I mean, I was just like, you know, I was really going for it. And I loved it, you know. So I think that I felt like it. I didn't look at it as a challenge or as hardly or scary even. I never even thought about that. You know, so it was just kind of exciting, you
Yeah, absolutely.
know.
Well, I do think also going to what you just said, you felt empowered, you enjoyed doing it, you didn't care if you had to come after dinner and do some more work. And then also too, I think the big point that people probably don't see is that just what you touched on of going to the library at Oklahoma State, reading and reading and reading and printing, the books and the magazines and the countless hours of doing that, you know. If you had to maybe do that for biology, maybe you wouldn't want to do
It
that,
would have been a real drag.
right? Yeah, but you have an innate desire to learn about those types of things. And so maybe that side of things that you didn't necessarily enjoy about school, you dove into what you're doing professionally now. And I think that's a really important point, is to find those things. And then once you find those things, it doesn't feel necessarily like work. Now, there's going to be tough times for sure, I'm sure. But you're willing to go above and beyond and just spend countless hours because you enjoy it.
Absolutely. It's like a treasure hunt, you know. So that's really the way I felt about it, you know. So it was exciting, and also that was through that time I became a Christian when I dropped out of school. So I went to the head of the department and I told him that I'm gonna I'm dropping out, and I think the answers are in religion, not in science. And I don't really know why I said that, because I really didn't know why I said that. But I was just like, I've been looking in science and theories and all this, and I can't get to the bottom line of it all. I mean, it's, I want to go deeper than a theory, you know, and it was just frustrating, you know. It's like, I need to know more than that. And so he was the first guy that he had, amazingly enough, he had actually been the youth leader at my church when I was in high school, and he was the head of the sociology department.
Oh,
And
wow. Okay.
he said, "You need to talk to this guy from our church," which I said, "Yeah, sure. I mean, I'm ready, you know, to talk to anybody about anything." I was playing in a rock and roll band and had hair about halfway down my back, but I was really sincerely looking for answers, for real answers, not theories and hypotheses and all this stuff. I was looking for real answers, and somewhat spiritually, but also just the future of my life. You know, it was just, I mean, I don't know, I could differentiate things very well. But so I met with this guy, and he said, "Well, you need to accept Jesus as your personal savior." And I go, "Well, I think he's in the Bible, right?" And because I went to church, but I didn't listen. I hung out with my friends, you know, and I mean, it was not an interest of mine particularly. And he said, "Yeah." And I said, "Well, I don't know who he is." And he said, "Well, you need to get a Bible and read and find out." And I did, you know. I mean, I was inquisitive, and I was curious what he was talking about. And took me about a year and a half to get through the New Testament, but by that time I had realized who Jesus is and had made that decision to put my trust in him. But I was had just gotten married, and my wife had wanted to have nothing to do with it. She said, "That's fine for you, you know, that's good for you." And that was it, you know. So but I felt like about a year later she changed her mind on that. But I felt like those two things came together, like kind of my more spiritual purpose. Why am I here? What's life about? And also, what am I going to do with my life? Which is strictly just my own personal goal. I mean, it wasn't anything, you know, super, you know, religious or anything. It was just, what am I going to do? And but they came together, and so I think that was part of, I felt like in my life, what God answered, he answered both questions, you know. And so that was, I think that all was a transformation for me in the mid 70s, after I'd already started the business actually. I even before that, when I started the business, it came to my realization that I wanted to start a speaker company. And I mean, I was kind of praying to God, but I didn't exactly know what I was doing. But yet I felt like maybe there was a purpose for me, and that I needed to find the right place. And you know, all those thoughts were kind of going through my head, and it just kind of came to me that what I really like to do is build speakers. And I was sitting in grad school one afternoon and just like bored out of my mind, thinking, you know, if you could be doing anything right now, what would you like to be doing? That thought came to me, and I thought, I'd like to be building speakers. And so it was like revelation, you know. And it was kind of like, so, you know, I'm going, well, you know, it kind of dawned on me that maybe I had to think about that a little bit, you know, that's, I mean, this is, you got, when you're about ready to get out of school, your whole life is ahead of you, you know. And I'm trying to think ahead of what would I like to be doing. And it wasn't what I was doing there. And so I think it just kind of came to me that I would like to be building speakers. And I went back, told my roommate, I'd like to start a speaker company. You want to go in with me? And he goes, "Yeah, why not?" And he had dropped out of grad school too. He was doing surveying. And that was it. That was a business plan. But and then we, so I took the money, we bought some tools, and started building speaker enclosures for bands, because I was playing in a band in our garage. And that was the start. in 73. But so it was kind of wandering all over the place, but it was kind of a conglomerate, of all these things kind of converging, and is how it kind of all came to be.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's a lot in what you just talked about, but how did maybe the kind of diving into faith and trust and stepping out and kind of trust and going for something, maybe the word that comes to my mind when you're talking is stewardship, because I feel like
Yes.
that's understanding of who you were and kind of the gifts and the talents and the makeup that you had, but you
Yeah.
took the risk to go out and steward those things, those passions that you uniquely have. Because I can say that's not exactly my passion. We're all different. We're all uniquely made.
Absolutely.
And
Yeah.
so how did that kind of give you maybe confidence and trust to step out and start the company and then just go for it?
Well, I think stewardship is too kind of a word. I did it because it's what I wanted to do.
Sure.
You know, it's not like I was so God conscious and resource conscious and other people conscious that I did this out of that. I was just thrilled that I felt like maybe God had given me a direction. I was going to go for it, and it really wasn't a whole lot more than that. I didn't really have any high and mighty goals. It was just it was really pretty self-centered at that stage in the game for me. You know, this is what I like to do. I love it. I'm doing it, and I'm so happy I get to do it. That's about it. You know, as I became a Christian and began to, read the word and begin to understand more about serving other people. And not being just all about yourself, not being that way. I learned those things later. So I think it was just the grace of God that helped me there and probably put up with me, because I didn't know a whole lot different at that stage in the game. I mean,
Sure.
I do now, and I realize my business now is not just about building a better speaker, it's more about the people and the people we work with and the way we treat them. And there are a lot of different things in that aspect, but my initial goal was just to build a better speaker, and I was excited to do that and research it and go for it. So, yeah, I mean, that was where I was at that stage.
Yeah. Well, within those first, I think, 7 years, I've heard you talk about, it wasn't like it was just booming at the time, but you just kind of kept at it and kept
No,
at it.
exactly.
And so
Yeah.
you touched on the word perseverance. How did
Yeah.
that play a part? And we talked earlier about not quitting.
Right.
So how did that kind of come to fruition? You know, maybe the seventh or eighth year, I remember you talking about how it just kind of punched through. But at the same time, you may not have seen the growth that you wanted to see before
Yeah.
then.
Yeah, it's, I mean, I guess I'm just wired a little differently. I was not interested in it. I was so interested in finding what was right for me and going for it, that I wasn't even really thinking about growth. The fact that we didn't grow fast was not a huge concern to me as long as we could stay in business. And fortunately, my wife had a good job, good teaching job. We lived a pretty simple life. We had two dogs, no kids. And so we were able to make it. We never, I felt like we never felt like we were lacking for anything. Although we didn't have a whole lot, it was like we just didn't need a whole lot. And so it all kind of worked out. And I was not really, I didn't get into this business actually to make money. So I was not interested in growth, although I felt it as a vocation. But I didn't get into it because I thought it was a great opportunity to make money. I had no idea if there was any market at all. You know, it was just like pretty naive in that way. But it was to do something that was right for me, and to just do my best at it, and that was pretty much it. So there again, I think God was gracious to me in that I had a wife that had the income that we could live on, and most of the money I lost money the first 3 years, made a little in the fourth year and began to make a little more. Most of it I put back into the business. I didn't take much out, and but I was happy with what I was doing. I was fulfilled in it. I was not like, oh my God, when are we going to make such and such amount per year? Or, it was I was not shooting for that at all. Probably sounds kind of silly, but I just wasn't,
Yeah. Well,
I was happy with what I was doing. I was satisfied,
Well, I think, for a lot of people today, if they're starting their own business, if you don't make money the first couple of years, I think a lot of people would kind of fold over and quit.
Right.
But I think because you felt fulfilled, you had a sense of purpose, a deep sense of purpose, and you enjoyed what you did, you're willing to keep going. And obviously, you turned the corner, but also, you were, I think, is it correct? You were doing stereos at the time, and then you kind of moved into car speakers, and hence the name Kicker. Is that right?
Yeah, we did. Well, at first we tried about everything. Mostly we're selling PA speakers to bands, and then we sold some to some music stores, and then I developed a whole line of home stereo speakers. We sold in our little shop there. We had a line of home stereo speakers, and there wasn't much in the way of car audio until about 1980. Although we sold some raw speakers, guys could build their own system or build their own speakers. But yeah, so it kind of morphed into different things. I picked up a line of products called Peavey, which they made sound equipment for bands, and I did get that franchise in the late 70s, and I think that was one of the things that helped us grow, because I actually had something that I could just order and resell. We didn't have to build everything, and so I generated more capital and began to sell that, and that really helped us move up to the point of being living off my salary instead of my wife's salary by about 1980. But there was a lot of times in those early years, probably the early 10 or 15 years, even that I would think, maybe I should just sell this and get out of it, or some, you want to quit. I mean, there was a lots of temptations to quit. And but I would go back to kind of the swimming team. I quit. I didn't like that feeling. And then the other thing was, if I felt like God gave me this and I really felt like this was for me, I mean, I was just really convinced of that. And then the next question would be, so what are you going to do? And I would go, well, I don't know, and I think that talking to the Lord, I guess, I think you got me into this. So I don't know what else I would do, but I don't know how I'm going to keep going either. So, you're kind of struggling with that. And, that's where, you just ask for help, and, ended up, I would always end up making it through. And a lot of times, not exactly knowing how, but things shifted and changed a little bit, and we made it through and we survived. But I went through that a lot of, I mean, quite a few times, at least 8 or 10 times, serious times.
Yeah.
That whole conversation of, well, I think I'm going to quit, and what would you do now, and where would you go, and I didn't know, and I was kind of hemmed in, so that was probably good for me, but it's tough, and a lot of it's financial pressure starting a business. I mean, a lot of the pressure comes, in fact, 80 or 90% comes from the financial end.
Yeah.
It gets your attention fast.
Absolutely. But I think that's an important point. You said 8 or 10 times. There might have been more times than that. People can be driving a GMC truck right now and see your speakers in the back of it and think, oh man, he's always had it made. They've always been there. But there's a series of steps of overcoming doubts, fears, discouragement, pushing through, pressing, trying new things, failing, adapting. I mean, I know you've lived it, and so you have the story that people maybe don't see behind the scenes of that pressure, financial pressure, taking a step into something different. I mean, there could be a variety of things that you've done in your career but each time you persevered, and it's kind of interesting. It kind of goes back into when you're in high school or the swim team, you know, and not wanting to quit. And I think that's really important because it is very easy to quit. But at the same time, discerning when do I need to quit or do I need to pivot? And I think sometimes it's just in discerning the press. I'm going to keep pressing into it.
Right. Yeah. It's, I think anybody that starts a business, I mean, if you don't have doubts about it from time to time, you're kind of superhuman, I think, you know, because there's lots of challenges that, you know, I think, I mean, I kind of talked to groups about, you know, what does it take to start a business and run a business? And a while back, I came up with like the three P's, and I thought it was a first one is passion, is that you got to really want it. You know, you can't be playing around. You have to really want it. And then perseverance, and then you got to hang in there with it. And then for me, the third one is prayer, because you come up against these situations that seem to be impossible. In fact, a lot of them just naturally are kind of impossible. And so, you know, that's I think where your faith comes in as a Christian, to believe that God can help you, that you can't, and just acknowledge, I can't do this. I can't figure this out. I don't really don't know where I'm going to go. I'm going to handle this situation. I believe you do, but I don't know. And I'd sure like to know. I need some help here, you know. So you got to kind of humble yourself. And if you don't, well, you'll get humbled anyway, because we come up against situations and you go, you know, this beats me. You know, I don't know how we're going to get through this. But to me, those are three ingredients. But it starts with, for me, and these are based upon my life and my experience. I can't speak for anybody else, but you have to really want it, you know, and not just sort of, you know. And then persevering is the working out of that passion, you know. It's easy to get real kind of excited and worked up about something, really want to do it, but when you get to the doing, you run into the difficulties, you know, and that's then where the perseverance and then prayer goes, when you come into situations that, frankly, there doesn't seem to be any great way out of this thing. You know, you're up against a brick wall, and that does happen. It happens in life and everything, but in business, it definitely is there.
Absolutely. Those three P's are so important. If you can kind of decipher things through that lens, it can really help you press into more opportunities and going through difficult times as well. So
it makes sense for me anyway.
Yeah, I love that. Well, going back into kind of your story of Kicker, you guys continue to press forward and things started to really happen for you.
Yeah.
You know, maybe describe a little bit of some of the big breakthroughs for you and your company, and maybe any stories behind those that were maybe something people don't see that were, you know, maybe, you know, tougher to get around and go towards.
Well, in 1980, a friend of mine came to me that had been a customer of mine. He was a college student at, earlier on than that. And he liked speakers too. And so he would come down to my little shop and we'd talk about speakers. And we really hit it off. We liked each other. We liked speakers. And he actually had some money. So he would pay me to build the speakers that he wanted to try. And so I kind of did that for him and would talk about things. Well, after college, he went back to his hometown in Canton, Oklahoma, and started the music store. And he called me up one day and said that there was a lot of guys that drove pickups in that area that were working in the oil field. They had money to burn. They'd come in his store and they wanted some music in their trucks, but they were two-door pickups back then, not too many of the, you know, extended cab or even, you know, four-door pickups. And so there wasn't much space to put a bass speaker in there. You could put door speakers in, but he said they want some bass, you know, in these trucks and good sound. And so he said, there's a space behind the seat When you fold the seat forward, it's kind of like a little trapezoidal shaped space that, and so I had him send me the dimensions of that, what would fit in there. And so I designed a speaker that would fit in that space. And it was a bass speaker, but it also had some tweeters on top. So the rest of the sound could come out in the little crack behind the seat. And so really you didn't have to have any other speakers in the vehicle. And because that's what I did was design speakers. And I mean, that was my deal. And so I sent it over to him and he called me back and said that the customers loved it, the guys loved it, they want more. And he said, you know what they call this speaker? And I go, no, what do they call it? He said, well, they call it the ass kicker because it hits your butt right through the seat. And I go, yeah, I know, because we put one in, a buddy of mine struck, and I listened to it after we designed it. I go, yep, they're right. That's what
Right.
it is. And so he was super excited. And you know, later we probably 3 years later, I didn't even know how to trademark anything. We decided to trademark the name. We dropped the ass part. We thought that was kind of cool for, you know, marketing purposes. You know, nowadays you got big ass fans and everything else, you know, but I don't know. But I like the name Kicker because it described the impact of the sound of the bass. And I thought that's kind of cool. And it's an action word. And it's not just a name like Pioneer or Jensen or Bose or whatever. It's actually got some pizzazz to it. And so anyway, we built some more for him. And we couldn't actually build enough because it was just me and my roommate that were doing it. And I sold them to him for $125, and he sold them to the customer for 250. So he was making 125 bucks every time he'd sell one. And these guys were just like, the word was spreading. And so he wanted me to build more. And I said, well, why don't you just build these yourself? This is not, I'm headed towards building these big concert sound systems for you know, big venues and rock and roll PA systems and stuff like that. I thought that was my calling, you know, I thought that was my direction. And I just said, why don't you just do this? I'm not really interested in car audio. And he said, no, I don't want to do it. You know, I don't want to set up a wood shop, and you're already set up to do it. And so he convinced me to try to market them to some other car stereo shops. He said, I think other car stereo shops would buy these. And his actual motivation was so that I would keep building them for him. And if I he thought if I see it as big enough business, I'll keep doing it, you know, and expand it, and he can keep buying from me. And so we actually did that, and we had a guy that stopped by that said he was a rep. I didn't even know what a factory rep was, but he said he could sell these kicker speakers to retail stores. And we said, how many can you build? And he said, sell a month. And he said, well, I think I can sell 200 a month. So by that time, what I'd done was hired the bass player in our band. He started a wood shop, and he was building the cabinets and installing the parts in them. And so we built 200, put all our money together. And then this guy just disappeared. He never came back. And we had 200 sitting there. And so my friend that had built the cabinets, he said, well, I've got a pickup truck. Maybe we can put one in it, and I'll go try to sell them because I can't build anymore. We're out of money. And so that's how it actually got started. And then my friend with the music store said, I think you can sell these to some other stores. And so to me, this was a whole thing that came as an opportunity that really, again, like I'll have to acknowledge God in that because, see, I was actually going another direction. This really came in the back door. And frankly, I was not even interested in it. And, you know, I was willing to just give it away, but this guy just kept pushing me, you know? And so I go, well, okay. And then we had those 200 and we had to sell them. And so that was when he went out, and then I paid him 100 bucks for every dealer he would set up. And this was in 80, probably 81 or something like that. And so he'd go into a town, and we had 18 of these kicker boxes in the back of his pickup truck. And we installed a nice system that would play the kicker box in the truck so he could demonstrate it. So he'd go into a town and go to the phone booth, which there was no internet, and look in the yellow pages and find car stereo shops and drive around and pick the best one and go in and ask them to come out and listen to the product. And we sold almost 100%. And it was just actually so easy. It was kind of crazy. And we would sell them one to show on their showroom and one to go, one they could sell. And then he'd call back to me with the rest of the order, and then I would ship it to them. And so we had this, it was this, like it was handed to us, you know, this whole opportunity. And once that started growing, it was just crazy because they had been developing amplifiers for cars that would put out more power than just the old power boosters they would sell that were 18 watts. Some engineers had figured out how to make a switching power supply that could put out like 100 watts or 200, so they could really power these things, and it really sounded great. You know, it was more than just some little speakers rattling in the doors. And so car audio just began to boom in the 80s. And I was like set up. I was in the right place, the right time, the right product. And I had 7 years experience running a business. I knew how to run a business from back to front. And our business started growing. And through the 80s, we averaged 70% growth a year for 10 years in a row. And a lot of years, it was way over 100% growth. I mean, it was just this exponential ride of business. And we were able to hold it together and come out of that time, you know, basically a national and starting to be an international company in 10 years. And it just, the opportunity was just pretty unbelievable. And it was really, I would say, handed to us, you know, really. And I realized about 1985 that this was where I should be instead of, and I sold my retail, my other little store. And went with this, and because it was the same thing. It's still audio. You're still designing speakers. It's just for a different application. And so I realized, yeah, this is just as fun as the other stuff, and there's actually a market for it, you know. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of the growth experience. And we obviously developed a lot more products during that time, which is my forte, was developing new speaker products. And we got into electronics about 1990 to go with those, and hired a guy to design our electronics, an OSU graduate. And we also hired a guy to set up our international sales department in 1990 and begin, because we had so many requests from other countries for this product, we began doing a small national ad in an audio magazine, quarter page black and white ad, and we were getting all these requests from other countries. And so it was a pretty, pretty exciting time. But the first 7 years I look at is that was where I got my PhD. You know, I stayed in school, you know, PhD in business and speaker design. And so I was ready, you know, when the opportunity came. I was at a point, I was really not a novice, although it had been a small company, but I knew how to run a company, how to do all this stuff just with less zeros attached, you know. And so, so that was, it was not, you know, I hate to say it, you know, for people that like to plan a lot, but it was not exactly planned.
No, you know? What a story. What a story of, you talked about PhD. You also got a PhD in perseverance at the start. And then, like you said, when you were ready, when the opportunity came, you were ready. And I think a big part of it too.
I think that's where I would say that the Lord helped me, because he had the oversight of how those things would play out, which I didn't. So I had no idea what was going to happen in 7 years, or you know, I had no idea. I couldn't see that. But at the time that it came, it was the right timing for me. And it wouldn't have been the right timing earlier. I mean, I couldn't have handled it. I wouldn't have known what to do with it. And I just wasn't ready. You know, so.
Absolutely. Well, you touched on a lot of the story of how it got started, and really the growth of Kicker and the inception of the company. And obviously you guys expanded not just nationally at a broad scale, but internationally at a broad scale as well. And so there's been so much growth, you know, for Kicker and what you've done, but it's kind of interesting to be able to look back and to see all the progression and the opportunities and the challenges that go along with that. But kind of going into maybe another aspect of life that people often forget is, you know, having a family, being a dad, husband, father. What was that like for you? Maybe as it did it differ for you at the different stages of your company of the amount of time you put in, or did you always try to make sure that your wife and your kids had top priority?
I think some of that goes back to my parents, and I would say probably my mom on this one. And you know, as parents, you'll be surprised the things you say that stick with kids that seem almost insignificant to you at the time. But back in high school, you know, when we started this band, and I was like loving playing in a band, and I was making money, and I think my mom saw that, because she's the one that got me into music, into playing piano, and all this, that I might like to become a professional musician. And I remember she just said, just remember that if you're a professional musician, it's pretty much a life on the road, you know. Somehow that just stuck with me, is that, you know, and I thought, I don't want to be that guy that's always gone all the time. So, you know, it's funny how that was all she ever said about the whole thing. That was it. But I think that influenced me, that I realized I love playing music, but I don't want to sacrifice my life and family on the altar of music. You know, and so I don't want to do that. And another thing, like in business, that when I picked up the, well, like I said, I became a Christian and I started reading the Bible, and I saw a lot of things that directed me, you know, as far as not just serving yourself, but serving other people, you know, and so not always wanting to get your way and everything and do everything your way, but considering other people too, and as you know, as important as yourself, or even more important in certain cases. And so that definitely influenced me. But when I picked up the Peavey line of sound equipment, Hartley Peavey, the guy that started that company, was kind of my idol. I'm going like, this guy started this company, it's become huge. And he makes musical equipment, which I love. You know, I'm a musician and I love all that stuff and the PA things and, you know, and all of it. So when the rep would come in and that represented Peavey, and I would always like quiz him about what's going on at Peavey and what's Hartley Peavey like and what does he do and, you know, how does he run that company. And I got to go visit the company, and I was like just totally interested, enthralled with it. He told me once about, he said that all he ever thinks about is his company. And he was telling me about a dinner they were at where he left the dinner and went outside, and he was just making phone calls and thinking about his company and just left everybody. And I thought, I don't want to be that guy, you know. And so somehow, you know, just a few little things to me really hit home, that I didn't want to be that guy. And so I really was conscious of that. Of course, we didn't have kids for 7 years, so it was just my wife and I. We had a lot of time together. And I did go back after dinner sometimes to work. And then I did quit that after a while. I used to have to work Saturdays, and sometimes I'd go in early on Saturday mornings. And that was okay with just the two of us. It wasn't like, you know, we had plenty of time together. But when we had kids, I didn't do that, and then I focused on them and put them generally ahead of things in the business. I tried to always put them ahead of things in the business rather than after things in the business. And I was just, you know, intentional about that. I think it worked out okay. You know, there's always stuff that you have to do. But then when some of them, my daughter and my son, did a little bit of work at the company, The other thing was, though, I didn't give them very good jobs. I gave them hard jobs, because I didn't want them to feel like they're like privileged, overprivileged, and get easy jobs. My son was out there power washing the parking lot and worked on the line repairing speakers and different stuff like that. So you don't want to spoil your kids either, So those are just some thoughts I had on it. But I think I a couple of things that really stuck with me that helped guide me in that.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think, a lot of those points of just being intentional, just being intentional about being home, being present. It's really tough, especially if you're so passionate about a business to want to be overly stimulated from it. So when you come home, it's tough to sometimes put it away. But if you can put it away, I know that's one thing I look at my dad and I'm very appreciative is, I didn't realize the stuff that he goes through at work and then he comes home and I never know what's
You
going on.
don't
And I appreciate that now
know
tremendously. So, anyway, I think that's a great perspective. And real quickly, as we wind down, I want to make sure we get out here on time for you. But I've got a little fire round for you. So it's a little say a sentence and you can finish with a word or sentence, however you feel
it.
led.
Okay.
You can do anything if.
Do anything here. If
Huh.
it's the right thing.
Humility means.
Probably putting others first.
You have a favorite vacation spot?
I think it's more who's with me rather than where it is.
Yeah.
Like I enjoy vacationing with my family or friends, but the places I like a lot of places. So yeah.
Yeah, besides Lake
Besides Lake
McMurtry,
McMurtry or yeah, Lake
so.
Carl Blackwell.
Yeah. Courage means.
Just being willing to face up to the situation.
Do you have a favorite book?
Well, the Bible, you have to say.
Awesome. It all comes down to.
Well, that's kind of a hard one. I don't know if I can just give one answer on that, but I'm kind of back to the I'd say, perseverance is a big one there.
Absolutely. Well, we're done the fire round. The final two questions I have for you is there a certain piece of best advice that you have not already said, and what would it be?
Well, I would say life in general is finding salvation through Jesus Christ. I mean, to me, the most important thing in life is that we're separated from God, and He made a way back. And if I live this life and don't make my way back, I guess what was the point?
One thing before I get to the final question, one thing that I was thinking about earlier, and we didn't get to talk about it, but what was it for you, and this is in the context of faith, what made sense to you so much that you wanted to follow Jesus as opposed to, you're seeking out different things and trying to understand life? What was it about Jesus or the Bible that kind of just clicked with you to make sense and dictate the rest of your life?
Well, like I said, my search, I guess, and when I dropped out of grad school was what is reality? What's the bottom line? Because I had enough theories, hypotheses, we think this, our studies show this and all that stuff. And I go, that's not good enough for me. I want to know. I want like when you dig deep enough, where's the bedrock? What's behind all this? What's all behind life? I mean, what's the point of it? I don't, I was like, that was something I was like very passionate about, probably because of, again, maybe driven by frustration of not knowing, what I was doing, where I was going. I needed something to anchor myself on. And so, just a little story. My buddies and I were driving out to California. This was in the early 70s. And my future wife, my Becky, was out there. She was going to school, summer school in Santa Cruz. And we were driving out there, me and two of my other buddies. And, we smoked pot, believe it or not. And we would sit around. We were camping. We'd sit around a campfire and smoke pot and discuss what is reality, what is life, what, all these deep subjects that, that we really didn't get anywhere with. But we were good friends and just kind of like, we're kind of getting into these deep philosophical things. And I was really serious about, I needed to find out what is reality, what is bottom line to life. But, I don't know. And I just feel like I'm floating. And anyway, so that was the kind of the going out there. And then on the way back, we were driving back, and my buddy, one of them was sitting in the front seat, of course, no GPS, so he's the navigator. He's got the map. And we're driving on I-40, and one of the guys says, "Well, I'm hungry. Let's see if we can find a place to eat. We're out in the middle of nowhere." And so he's looking at the map and says, "Well, there's a little town about 5 miles off the road here, and but you're going to have to turn off." And I looked up, and that was the exit right there. And so I just turned off, and then we drove into that town, and it had a little town square, and there was a little grocery store on the town square, and we bought some bread and peanut butter and jelly, and went over there on the picnic table in the town square, sitting there, and making peanut butter and jelly sandwiches. And we were pretty scroungy looking, we all had long hair, and we've been traveling. And so this lady comes up, this older lady, probably older than me now. I think she's probably in her 80s, and she's had this like white hair and just really, really happy, and she comes up and says, "Well, I'm just going around telling everybody about Jesus." And I was like, "This is interesting," because I had started reading the Bible at that point in time. I thought, "Well, this is interesting." And my other buddy, the most cynical one, says, "Well, would you like to have a sandwich with us?" And she says, "Yes." And I was like, "I'm going to fall out of my chair." Like, I can't believe he asked her in the first place. Then she sat down and said, "Yes." And so she sat down and started making a peanut butter and jelly sandwich and was just sitting there talking to us and telling us about Jesus. And I was like, "Wow, this is like freaky. This is interesting." And anyway, she looked over at me and she said, "Jesus is the only thing that's really real." And I was like, "Oh God," it hit me in the chest. I mean, it was just like somebody just hit me, And but I had no, I didn't know what it, I it didn't sink in. It was just like something hit me, like this is true or something. I don't know. It was just, and then she just went back to eating her sandwich, and we talked some more, and then she left. And that was it. And but I didn't meditate on that a whole lot, but I knew that something kind of transpired there, and I didn't really know what. And later, I was reading in the Bible, because I was reading it a little bit every day. Was reading in Colossians, where it says, Jesus says, "By him and through him were all things made, and all things consist." And it says, "And all things are held together." In other words, he's the bottom line. And I was like, he is God. I mean, like she gave me my answer, but I didn't understand it at the time. I mean, I didn't even process it. And then later I read that, and I go, "Okay, that's it." And I'm going, "He is the bottom line to life. He holds it all together. He's what's behind all this." And in the scripture, he even says, "I and the Father are one." There's one and the same. And I was like, I'm going, that's what I needed to know. And so I think that was a as even 40 years later, has been like a just a big factor in me, in kind of, you might say, my revelation. It was like, it was a revelation to me, because it's what I was looking for. Anyway, it was just, that was very important to me. And it was just so interesting how that all happened. It's so random.
Yeah,
Very
absolutely.
random.
And I think when you have faith, you can see how, God's hand was a part of all that. But also too, I think it's important to note that You were also seeking. You were trying to understand and seek and learn. And it's just interesting, like you talked about, many, many years later, you can remember those moments very vividly and how it impacted you. So I just wanted to kind of touch on that because that was a question I had earlier. But the final question I have for you
Oh, yeah, one more.
is this podcast is called Building Excellence. What does building excellence mean to you?
Well, I think over the years I've come to the conclusion that for me, building excellence wasn't like building a better speaker. It wasn't about me achieving something or being great, somehow. The way that things happen are basically through relationships, treating other people right. And I think that's the key to building excellence is the way that you treat other people. I mean, I think that's the most important thing. If you look at what Jesus said, he said, love your neighbor as yourself. He said everything, the whole Bible, is all wrapped up in that one little thing. And so if you want excellence, you can't attain it without good neighbor. And with that, I think you're going to attain excellence in whatever way, maybe let's say you're meant to, what you call excellence. I think to me, that's excellence. That's it there. And it's not something external. It's more,
Absolutely.
yeah.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, Steve, thank you so much for coming on the podcast, for sharing
Yeah.
your story and a lot of what you talked about, your journey of faith, but also your journey of your business. When we talked about stewardship earlier, maybe it didn't seem like that's what it was, but you can look back now and see, there's many ways that your company and you have been able to impact millions of people, families, lives by just being able to listen through a speaker or some type of thing that you guys have done and
No.
been creative. And so I think kudos to you and thank you for being able to do that. If people wanted to find out more about you and Kicker, what's the best way of learning more about you all? Besides,
Kicker.com.
yeah, besides looking in the back of a new truck,
All right.
so
Yeah, well, that's I think this podcast is pretty much says kind of what we're about. Obviously, there's a lot of stuff that we do in the material world, and so we have lots of products and sell in a lot of different places. But kicker.com has got all the stuff that we sell, and that's but I think what you got is more of the real story. If you get a chance, come and visit us in Stillwater, Oklahoma. We've got a visitor center. We've got a lot of really nice cars in the front with kicker systems in them, and you can kind of get a feel for what we are. We give tours of the facility to bigger groups, not just individuals, but school groups and different things like that. And I love doing that. So yeah,
Awesome.
those are some ways to find out more about us.
Yeah, we'll put the link in the show notes. Steve, thank you so much for coming on the show.
You bet, Bailey. I enjoyed it, man.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Building Excellence Podcast. If you found value today, we would really appreciate it if you shared the show and left a rating and review. Also, be sure to follow us on all podcasts and social platforms, as well as YouTube, where you can watch full video episodes. To learn more about the podcast or any coaching or speaking, check out baileymiles.com. Thanks again, and now go work to build excellence in your life, leadership, and legacy.